Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 17, Description of the Varnashram System, Text 24. Samudharanti ye vipram siddhantam mat parayanam tam udarishye na chira apa Apadbhyo nor Ivaranavat Samudarantiye Vipram Siddhantam Matparayanam Tan Udarishye Nachirat Apadbhyo nor Ivarnavat Samudharanti Evipram Siddhantam Matparayanam Tan Udarishyena Chira Apadbhyo nor Ivarnavat Samudharanti Evipram Siddhantam Matparayanam Tan Udarishyena Chira Apadbhyo nor Ivarnavat
Apadbhyo nor Ivarnavat
Samudharanti
Samudharanti
Uplift
Yea,
those who
Vipram,
a Brahman or devotee,
Siddhanta,
suffering from poverty,
Matparayana,
surrendered to me,
those who have uplifted.
Udarishye,
I will uplift.
Nachira,
in the near future.
Apadbhya,
from all miseries.
Nor a boat.
Eva, like.
Arnava,
from the ocean.
Translation. Just as a ship rescues those who have fallen into the ocean, similarly, I very quickly rescue from all calamities those persons who uplift Brahmins and devotees suffering in a poverty-stricken condition. Purport. The Lord has described how Brahmins and devotees achieve the perfection of life, and now a similar perfection is offered to those who utilize their materialistic wealth to relieve the poverty-stricken condition of devotees and Brahmins. Although one may neglect the devotional service of the Lord to pursue a material life of sense gratification, one can rectify one's position by dedicating one's hard-earned money to the service of the Lord. Seeing the difficult austerities accepted by saintly persons, a pious person should make arrangements for their comfort. Just as a boat saves hopeless people who have fallen into the ocean, similarly, the Lord uplifts persons who have hopelessly fallen into the ocean of material attachment if they have been charitable to the Brahmins and devotees. Samudharanti yevipram siddhantam matparayanam tan udarishye nachirad apadbyo nor ivarnavat. Just as a ship rescues those who have fallen into the ocean, similarly, I very quickly rescue from all calamities those persons who uplift Brahmins and devotees suffering in a poverty-stricken condition. Interesting. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutalesha Padipakti Vedanta Swamaniti Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharani Nera Vishesha Shunyavadi Pastiti Adesha Tarani Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasati Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. This is a very interesting verse. And it's reflecting a very important point in Krishna consciousness, which is a point which, of course, among a number of even many other points, really distinguishes Krishna consciousness from other processes. That is, how the Lord is merciful to those who are devoted to his devotees. In Bhakti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami makes the point that service to the devotees, serving the devotees, is a more effective way to develop love of God than trying to develop love of God. In that direct sense of really focusing the mind on the Lord and serving the Lord and glorifying the Lord. Of course, it's all extremely important and totally essential. But still, in a more personal sense, the Lord is more appreciative of those who are devoted to his devotees than he is of those who are devoted to himself. Certainly those who are devoted to himself but really are not so interested in the devotees. Generally, of course, you wouldn't find so much that someone is devoted to the Lord but truly disinterested in the devotees. Normally, if someone is a devotee of the Lord, they will understand this point. And on the basis of that understanding, or just in a natural way, they'll be devoted to the devotees as well as to the Lord. But if such a case may be there, then if someone is devoted to the Lord and glorifying the Lord and so many things like that, but particularly if they offend the devotees or a devotee, some devotees, and even if they don't really offend, but if they're just not appreciative and not really so interested or concerned about the devotees, then the Lord really notices that. The Lord is a person who notices things. He's not got what? ADD. Attention deficiency disorder. He's highly attentive. He's highly aware. He is truly tuned in to everything and everyone. Oh yes. So to the point that he is far more aware of what is our condition and what is good for us and what is bad for us than we are. Far more aware. Just the scope of his awareness, even about ourselves, far exceeds the scope of our awareness. Generally, it's like that, very, very much like that. So the Lord notices, and the Lord looks for certain things. And so we find, Srila Prabhupada quoted from the one Purana, or it seems like an Upa Purana perhaps, some secondary type of Purana called the Adi Purana. Although Adi Purana means the first Purana, but anyway. Srila Prabhupada quotes from that. You'll find from time to time, Srila Prabhupada quotes this verse, Ye me bhakta jana parita, na me bhakta chaye jana, mad bhaktanam chaye bhaktas, te me bhaktatama mataha. Ye me bhakta jana parita. Those people who say, me bhakta, they're my devotees. Na me bhakta, they're not my devotees. Those people. Na me bhakta chaye. So, but mad bhaktanam chaye bhaktas. Those people. Ye means who, those people. Mad bhaktanam chaye bhaktas. They're devotees of mad bhaktanam, of my devotees. Te, those people. Te me bhaktatama. Mataha. Those people are my devotees. Mataha. Krishna says, this is my opinion. This is how I understand things. Yes, so this is quite well known verse, and anyone who's been a devotee for some time would have definitely come across it and heard it, and this point is a very important point. It is also, it comes up in 9th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 4th chapter, where the Supreme Personality of Godhead instructs Devasa Muni, who had just before offended Maharaj Ambarish. In Srimad Bhagavatam, there are these different narrations, canto by canto, more or less. Anyway, there are so many different narrations of different happenings and different events with different people. And generally speaking, those narrations about the different events and the different people involved in the events, they're all the particular events or and the people or their situations, and they're all very exemplary, very outstanding, special examples of that type of person or that type of situation like that. So in the ninth canto then, in those earlier chapters, this is the fourth chapter, there's this discussion about Devasamuni offending Maharaj Ambarish and the dire consequences, most drastic consequences, which came upon the head of Devasamuni as a result. Yes, without going through the whole story, for no good reason, certainly no good reason, Devasamuni felt very offended by Maharaj Ambarish, although actually Maharaj Ambarish had not done anything offensive. Rather, under the guidance of very qualified devotees, he had chosen a particular course of action in a very sensitive situation and did the right thing. But Devasamuni, because he was not properly situated, he reacted in that way and tried to kill Maharaj Ambarish. It was truly a great aparad on the part of Devasamuni. Even though Devasamuni in many ways is a person at least in such a position, you wouldn't expect they're going to do things like that. He's highly knowledgeable in terms of Vedic understanding and great mystic yogi. Yeah, so such a person, highly educated in Vedic understandings and Vedic standards. You wouldn't expect such a person to react in that way. But he did, very wrongly, and as a result of this offense, really, extremely serious offense, just most horrific offense, he got a very severe reaction, even directly from the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, as an expression of the Lord's deep, not just dissatisfaction, but deep anger at having committed that offense against a very wonderful devotee. Maharaj Ambarish at the time, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, was on the level of bhava. That's pure devotional service. That's really pure devotional service, although interestingly enough, still not on the level of Krishna Prema. But anyway, bhava is also a very elevated level of Krishna consciousness. So, as an expression of the Lord's anger at that offense of Devasamuni, even though Devasamuni's very special person and in certain respects very advanced person, but the Lord became so disturbed, personally disturbed, that he sent a Sudarshan Chakra to kill Devasamuni. And Devasamuni, in his desperation to escape, he tried approaching different people. No, everyone said they couldn't help him, even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. And they advised him, this Sudarshan Chakra is the weapon of Lord Narayan. Go and see him. Surely he can save you. Withdraw the weapon. So Devasamuni did that by some very special means, because he's special. He was able to enter Vaikuntha and he approached the Supreme Personality of Godhead and begged him. So all this part at least is there in the fourth chapter of the ninth canto. So he begged and begged in very humble ways, they seem humble ways at least, and glorifying the Lord and how you are the deliverer of the fallen, and look at me, that you can save me, and I just want to take shelter of you. And then the Supreme Personality of Godhead instructed him, and those verses are there. There are maybe 10 verses or so, something like that, spoken by the Lord. And there, in those verses, the Lord addresses this point. At least, in a general sense, he addresses the point about the importance of devotees, how he values devotees, how he loves devotees, how the devotees are very dear to him. And therefore, ultimately, he cannot do anything unless Devasamuni goes and begs forgiveness and apologizes very sincerely to Maharaj Ambarish himself. Otherwise, the Lord says, I have no ability, I have no control here. I have no control. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains that the Lord explains that, well, that Devasamuni says to the Lord, you are very merciful to the fallen. You have such a merciful heart, such a soft, kind, compassionate heart for the fallen and the suffering and the degraded. And look at me. I'm one of them. I'm one of the most fallen and pathetic cases. So your soft heart, your kind heart, with your kind heart, please be kind to me. The Supreme Lord, Lord Narayan, says, yes, I have a very soft heart. It's a fact. However, there is a problem here. I do not have my heart any longer. I do not have my heart any longer. I've given my heart to the devotees. So as a result, even though what you say is right, I have a very soft heart and I am very compassionate. But under these circumstances, or just the factors, that on that basis I've lost my heart. I've given my heart to my devotees, so if you want some of that mercy from my heart, you have to go to the devotees who have my heart. And in this case, that devotee is Maharaj Ambarish. Otherwise, I'm incapable. I'm incapable. So anyway, as we said, the Lord speaks a sequence of verses, it may be 10, it's some substantial number of verses where step by step he examines this subject. And one of the points he makes in one of the either first, second or third verse like that, the Lord makes the point that I am under the control of my devotee. I'm not at all independent. I have no independence. Whatever the devotees say to do, I do it. Whatever they say not to do, I don't do it. Whatever they want, I supply. Etc. Like this. I'm completely under the control of my devotees. They're so dear to me. And then the Lord says to Devasamuni, what to speak of my devotees? Even people who are devotees of my devotees are very dear to me. Now, this means, this is really referring to people who are not the Lord's devotees, but alternatively, they're devotees of devotees, somehow or other, in some way. Because otherwise, like we said, normally you would expect anyone who's a devotee of the Lord is a devotee of the devotees also. And anyone who's somehow a devotee of the devotees must be a devotee of the Lord. However, there are cases where there are people who are devotees of devotees, as there are cases of people who somehow they have some narrow type of consciousness and they're devotees of the Lord, but not really devotees of the devotees. There are also cases of people who are devotees of devotees, but not really devotees of the Lord. But the Lord is saying there that even in these unusual cases, because if they're already, you know, just sort of in the 99% category or whatever it may be, those who are just devotees of the Lord and the devotees anyway, then, you know, it doesn't really, there's no need to make sort of like a special category of people who are devotees of devotees. Yeah. So, but there are. There are. Just like in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Well, just like, you could say. Anyone who's a devotee of Krishna, really, will be a devotee of Lord Chaitanya. In this Kali Yuga, what can you say? And anyone who's a devotee of Lord Chaitanya will be a devotee of Krishna. But in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, you know, it could easily be taken or seen to be like a sort of very extreme to extreme statement. But he says, anyone who's a devotee of Krishna but not a devotee of Lord Chaitanya is a, what? Demon. Hare Krishna. That's what he says. Anyone who's a devotee of Lord Chaitanya but not a devotee of Krishna is a demon. You can read it in Chaitanya Charitamrita yourself. So, yeah. So you get people like that. Anyway, you get all sorts, actually. But now, in this sense, there's certain special categories, special people, individuals, who fit into this category. One individual who fits into this category is Agasura, who was a very devoted brother of Putana. Yes. And Putana went back to Godhead, actually. I mean, that's another interesting case, but it's not exactly in this context here so much. But Agasura, he was very devoted to his sister, Putana. He was really deeply devoted. And when she was killed by Krishna, he became so extremely affected by that. Anyway, he dedicated himself practically absolutely to hating Krishna and getting revenge by killing Krishna. Right. So, he was so exclusively devoted in that sense, on the basis of his affectionate relationship with his sister, Putana. Yeah. That he was practically in, you could say, like, reverse Krishna consciousness. Reverse in the sense that he hated Krishna. But he was practically thinking of Krishna without cessation. Yeah. Because of his devotion to his sister. As it would happen, unknown to himself, Putana, who had already been killed by Krishna, had been transformed into a devotee by Krishna, by being killed by Krishna, and had already gone to the spiritual world. And is there as a nurse for Krishna in his younger days. Yeah, that's also an interesting discussion. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur addresses that in his Bhagavatam commentary. You know, where is she really? But anyway, without going into that, she's there. She is there, and she is a devotee, and she is Krishna's nurse. In the kingdom of God, she is a devotee. She's, you know, essentially on the level of pure devotional service, she's a pure devotee. That's what she is. And Agasura, unknown to himself, he was in fact devoted now to a devotee. Although he didn't see her as such, he didn't think of her as such, didn't even know she was like that. He just thought she was a dead demon who happened to be his sister. And, you know, he wanted revenge like mad. So, he was killed by Krishna. He attained, well, Krishna entered his body and expanded himself, and Agasura suffocated. That was the end of Agasura. He went to Vaikuntha. He actually got Sarupya Mukti because the Lord was within his body when he passed away. So, but still, you know, he was killed by the Lord. That's also there. He had such, he was in direct contact with the Lord when he died. That's also there. But still, the point is made that because he was so devoted to his sister, who happened to be a devotee. This was also a very important consideration in his going to Vaikuntha. Because the Lord accepts people or appreciates people who are devoted to his devotees. That is the point here. That, well, the word is, first word, samudharanti. Samudharanti. Which literally means they who lift people from the ocean. So as described in the purport, this is referring to people who are not really devotees in the sort of classical sense of sadhakas. People who are really trying to seriously progress in Krishna consciousness. It refers to people, well, the purport says, although one may neglect the devotional service of the Lord to pursue a material life of sense gratification, one can rectify one's position by dedicating one's hard-earned money to the service of the Lord. So pious people, some pious people, they do like that. They see how the devotees are making great efforts to be Krishna conscious and to spread Krishna consciousness and change the world and help the world. So even though they're in some sort of mixed condition, but still somehow their interest is aroused and therefore they help the devotees, the poverty stricken devotees. Yeah. Particularly the poverty stricken devotees, or any devotees actually. Anyone who helps a devotee for any reason, we're now talking about this category, and particularly those who really very seriously try to help the devotees, even though they themselves, at least according to the statement of the purport, even though they are actually engaged in the process of sense gratification, they're not just like congregational devotees who have to work in a material situation. It's not really just like that, but we're talking here, at least the purport is talking about people who are actually in the process of sense gratification. They're not like just like devotees who happen to be living outside because of their family situation and working in a Krishna conscious way, although they're working with materialists like that. Yes, so contact with the devotees is a very valuable thing. It's a very powerful thing. And in terms of how the Lord sees it, we should understand that it is a principle. The whole idea, what it is, we're talking about something which is extremely personal to the Lord. It's extremely personal. This is another aspect of Krishna consciousness which is not there to the same extent in other processes. That is the personality of Godhead. What is the personality of the Godhead? What sort of person is he? Is he just a sort of justice figure? Or what is he really? And even if you say he's a merciful type of person, what is it, that mercy? And how... In what ways is he merciful? To who is he merciful? And the degrees, and we're talking about very personal considerations and not just principles. Although, of course, behind them are certainly principles. So the Lord is a person. He's a real person. And not just such a big person that he ceases to be, you know, a person and becomes sort of like an institutional person or something like that. You know, you could say like a really abnormal type of person. At the same time, he's a very great, unlimitedly great person, but it doesn't reduce his personalness. Doesn't reduce his personalness. And ultimately it means actually that his personalness becomes very great. His personalness becomes very great. As we read when we were in the 10th canto, first volume, when was that? Was it a couple of years ago or whenever it was? It wasn't that long, but it was some time ago, first volume of the 10th canto, in these classes right here. I recall that one verse where I forget the actual term, Sanskrit word, but there was a verse in which it was stated that it was talking about the Lord's qualities, how the Lord has so many qualities, personal qualities, you know, his very multifaceted character he has. So there was Prabhupada was commenting and referring to Sanatana Goswami's commentary, and that particular Sanskrit word in the verse, which was indicating, meaning the qualities and the many qualities, personal qualities. qualities of the Lord. Sanatana Goswami said that actually the Lord has so many personal qualities. It's not just the 64 from Nectar of Devotion, but he has so many qualities. And for each devotee, the Lord has one particular personal quality, which is just, you know, oh, absolutely incredible, wonderful personal quality, just totally astounding. But for every single devotee, and that's a lot, there's one particular quality which the Lord only reveals to that devotee, and in the case of every devotee. And no other devotee sees that quality. And yeah, it is mind-boggling. Our minds do not have access much to these types of, to conceive, you know, the dimensions of some of these points. Yes, yeah, so this is personalness. So it's such an important point in Krishna consciousness. It's such an important point in religion. If people are Christian, Muslim, this or that. But it really is only found in Krishna consciousness, at least to the degree it's only found in Krishna consciousness by far, is, you know, like the implications of the Lord's appreciation and affection for his devotees. What it involves, how, what it means, how the Lord expresses that. And this is part of it. That if people just happen to find some devotees who are in poverty, and in that way they're really facing some difficulty, if people, even if they're on the material level in so many ways, but if they then really get behind that devotee and really deliver the devotee in that sense, because that's the idea, you know, it sounds, yeah, who uplift the devotees. Sounds like it's more than just a one-off thing, although even a one-off donation, it all helps. Yeah, it all helps, and the Lord will definitely notice it. But the people who really get behind and really help uplift the Brahmins and the devotees who are in poverty-stricken conditions, Krishna really takes note of that. And as a result, we can expect, it's only to be expected, that by the mercy of the Lord, in reciprocation, by the mercy of the Lord, that person's life is going to change. Is really going to change in the sense of becoming auspicious ultimately in Krishna consciousness. Yes, so, just see. And if that's the case, for people who are in many ways on the material platform and not making so much of an effort in terms of their own lives, spiritual lives, if that's the case for them, then what's the case, how does it work for those who are actually devoted to the Lord and actually trying their best to develop pure devotional service and really dedicated at the lotus feet of the spiritual master and really dedicated at the lotus feet of the devotees? Oh, well, what is their situation? Just as is said in the sixth canto, towards the end, anyway, in the course of the narration about Ajamil's deliverance, that if Ajamil, who chanted the Lord's name in the way that he did, basically just indicating his son, and with more or less oblivious to any real spiritual considerations, if he went back to Godhead, then Shukadev Goswami says, how can there be any doubt that someone who's really trying to chant the holy name of the Lord nicely and really giving their lives to that, how can there be any doubt they'll go back to Godhead? So these are very important points. And in this sense, they're very revealing points, very enlightening points about the personality of Godhead, about Krishna as a person. And in that sense, what we should do in order to improve our Krishna consciousness and our relationship with Him. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Yes.
I just wanted to really make
my mom. You've got to be quick. You were quick.
I was thinking from your class about this point of a person who's devoted to a devotee but not to Krishna, and the benefit or the apparent benefit that could be there. It is sometimes a preacher, or is this the right thinking in a preacher, that he may see somebody that really is not in a position to be preached to about Krishna consciousness, convinced about Krishna consciousness, but he can see that that person has an attraction to himself as a person. Is it the right thing for the preacher to develop that attachment between himself, like let's say a son preaching to the parents? The parents have no interest at all in Krishna consciousness, but they love the son. And if he tries to give Krishna consciousness, he may see that it'll push them away more. But okay, let me be a good son, let them get attached to me. Is that in effect bringing them closer? Is that positive for them?
Yes, it is. Of course, as with anything, you could say there are some possible pitfalls in that. But if it's done nicely, then yes, definitely. And in fact, before you mentioned a son or a child with their parents, that was what came to my mind. And I mean, I think some of us, I know myself, I've had personal experience of, you know, the value of doing that and the importance of doing that in a nice way, and being careful about it. But and even also people who are not family members, but just somehow or other they're like that, and the relationship develops with the devotee, with the preacher like that, then, you know, of course, family members, it's a very specific type of relationship. In other cases, the devotee, you know, if the devotee sees, actually, this person's becoming more devoted to me than to Krishna, the devotee should really try nicely, without being kind of impersonal or abrupt about it, the devotee should try and steer them more towards Krishna and, you know, or Prabhupada, like that. And, you know, because there's a danger, there are dangers. Like, the devotee could become influenced in the sense that, well, you know, that I can get money from the person for me. And it happens, it has happened in the past in some cases. Or, you know, another type of situation, but it's also, you know, very real, and it's definitely happened, that a male devotee is preaching to a female person, you know, whatever, non-devotee or someone becoming a devotee or vice versa, and then they become aware that actually the person is more interested in them. So, I mean, without mentioning any names, we have specific cases who are now, you know, reasonably successful grihasthas, I guess. You know, we have specific examples here in Durban where exactly that happened. And in the course of it, we were told, I mean, the majority of you were not around, but we raised the question, you know, is this okay? What's the relationship? You know, isn't it a little too close? And we were told, no, no, it's just Krishna conscious. And before we knew it, we were informed they were going to get married. So, but these things happen. It's not that these things never happen. I mean, that these types of situations never arise. They do. I mean, in that sort of situation, what the preacher should do if, you know, it becomes apparent that the other person has some other interest, you know, sort of come Krishna conscious, but it's also another interest in them, is hand them over to another preacher if they want to stay brahmachari or brahmacharini. But yeah, in principle, if, you know, if there are special circumstances like that, then it may be the devotee's duty to encourage them in, without going too far, but to encourage them to be attached to themselves.
But just to take that point, like sitting in it from a managerial point of view now, what about somebody who separates the senior devotee or the spiritual master from the institution, sees them as two separate entities?
Right.
That I really only have time to serve my Guru Maharaj. The institution, no.
Right.
I want all my facility, everything, just to go to the Guru, and I'm not interested in. Can that also be, I mean, is that a dangerous situation? Is it positive, or is it to be accepted? Or?
Well, in some cases, it's the best you can expect from the person. At least they're doing something. But in a broad sense of like general standards and how people should be encouraged and how they should develop in Krishna consciousness, then that would not be the right thing, actually. You know, it's all part of a Chintya Beda Bay Tattva. But it's now going to the bayed side too far. There's the abayed side also, the non-different. And, you know, many spiritual masters, well, I had personal experience with Giriraj Maharaj when one of his, I think now initiated disciples in South Africa was saying that to him, more or less, you know, what can I do for you? What can I do for you? You know, what can I get for you? And he told me that this was the situation, and this devotee was like persistently going on like this. And he told me that he told that devotee this point, that, you know, please provide things and do service for Prabhupada's institution. Please focus like that. And that will please me, if you want to actually please me. Like Prabhupada said, if you want to please me, distribute my books. Of course, there's also, having said that, there is the sort of, you know, abayed side, or, you know, the relationship itself and Prabhupada does address that also quite specifically, that the disciples should sort of facilitate or look after the spiritual master physically. Yeah. But you know, there are only so many liters of juice you can drink in a day. There are only so many pairs of socks you can wear. There are only so many towels you can use, and you run out of shelf space. It's a fact. I mean, and what to speak of greater considerations, like if people have substantial amounts of money which they would like to give and which they can give. Yeah. So both things have to be there. And, you know, it's also true that if, for example, when the spiritual master is present, particularly when he's present locally, that the disciples should make an effort to render some personal service. They should do it. And if they don't do it, at least put it this way, if they're in a position to do it, but they actually don't, not just that they can't if they have some important service and they're really busy, but if they actually don't do it, whereas they could, that's definitely a defect.
Sometimes we even find the other side of the scenario. I'm an institutional devotee, I'm service.
That's right.
My guru, well, you know, he's part of
that's
the,
right.
You get that extreme.
You get that extreme. It's less common, but you get it. Yeah. Is that okay?
Maharaj, many years ago, I knew one devotee who was, I wouldn't say 100% poverty stricken. And then a couple of years later, I saw this devotee. He was just right on the top there. Yeah, and I was thinking to myself, how is that possible? I wouldn't go to him, ask him, it wouldn't be etiquette of me, how did you come from there to where you are now? Is that...
You mean financially?
Financially, generally, everything, the family, his... so who was that, Krishna? Was Krishna a devotee? Because I was thinking of that verse which says, for those who are devoted in love and devotion, I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. Does it happen like that sometimes? The devotees are like in poverty, and then by their devotion, Krishna improves their material.
It can happen, of course, it can happen. Look at Sudama the Brahmin. And of course, there are other, you know, examples who we know of. And then there are other examples of devotees living in, you know, you could say materially very humble conditions, and they continue to live in humble conditions. So, you know, ultimately Krishna's there. Yeah. And Krishna, yeah, he is at least permitting if someone becomes materially affluent. He's at least permitting. And if someone remains in a materially meager condition, but actually they're serious devotees, then we should understand no, it's very likely at least that Krishna just feels it's best for them to stay in that condition for their Krishna consciousness.
Do we have a duty to those devotees that are struggling
to help them financially?
Financially, yes.
The rich brahmacharis. Well, if a sincere devotee is actually struggling, is truly struggling, then we have a duty, we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. We definitely do. Yeah.
Well, I'll just ask you a question, it's not related to the class, but it's a general question. When the devotee glorifies, what's, I don't know if you call them devotees, from another movement or something, and they say, oh, you know, he's so wonderful, he's doing such wonderful work in the community, it's really have admiration for him and this and that announcement. Is it correct or incorrect of us to do that? You know, almost like to the point of worshipping that person.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, there's so many wonderful devotees in ISKCON, just right here, just in this temple even. Yeah. There's so many wonderful devotees, and there's Krishna, that, you know, you might glorify someone, possibly, not that you would have to, or it would just automatically be a good thing, but you might, after you've finished glorifying those who are really the followers of Srila Prabhupada. But if you really are to appreciate and glorify the followers of Srila Prabhupada, you'll never, you won't have time to glorify anybody else.
One devotee went on and on and on and on about, I don't want to mention the personality.
See, it would depend who the person is also. Although if they're not, you know, actual followers of Srila Prabhupada, then...
That's what I'm talking about.
Anyway, I'm just saying.
Yes, yes.
If they're not, then... And if one is unable to glorify the followers of Srila Prabhupada much, doesn't sound like a very good sign.
Would it be incorrect of me to preach and to say, don't get too entangled in your glorification?
I think it would be a good idea. If you were able. Not an offense.
Well, the person was much more senior than me, so I couldn't really go to this.
It wouldn't be an offense. Srila Prabhupada ki. Have any English?